can be an extraordinary adventure. More than ordinary. In the gym. At home. At work. More than ordinary. Advice. Without the new agey bullshit.
It's been over a year since we recorded our first More Than Ordinary podcast, and our listeners have grown from a mere 100 or so to thousands. In commemoration of our one-year anniversary, and to introduce ourselves to those who have joined us along the way, today we are presenting an abbreviated encore of our first two episodes, where Anne Maria gives some of her life story and convinces Maria to join her as a co-host.
The fact is that we filter a lot of things, and I thought I would just dive in with no further ado and say why I think that I have some qualification to talk about being more than ordinary. My daughter Jennifer said to me once, you know, Mom, a lot of the students where I teach in downtown LA have stories that start like yours. They are in very low-income homes. They've been in foster care. They've been in juvenile hall. They maybe are being raised by a grandparent that is not from this country, perhaps doesn't speak English. And those stories very seldom end with, and by the time she was 19, she had her first college degree. At 21, she had an MBA. She started a few companies. She got a PhD.
Won a world judo championship.
Had
four amazing children.
Yes, don't forget the four amazing children. So I thought I would start this with being handcuffed to a bed in juvenile hall.
Not quite what people think, so you might want to explain a little
right.
more on that.
I was actually handcuffed spread eagle to bed, which makes it sound worse. Well, I got in a lot of fights when I was young, assaulted a police officer, got in some more fights, was in juvenile hall, got in fights with the staff, and so they put me into a cell because that's what juvenile hall is full of, and then they handcuffed me to a bed because I was punching people, and they kicked one of the staff members in the face, and so then they...
We're not endorsing these. This is just part of the story.
I was... All of these things happened before I was 16, by the way. So anyway, I'm about 14 years old, laying handcuffed, spread eagle to a bed in juvenile hall. And I thought to myself, this would be a really good opening for the book when I write about my life when I'm president of General Motors.
The ultimate, you will rue this day.
Right. More than ordinary. And I'm not president of General Motors.
But you are president of Seven Generation Games.
Right. And so that's pretty cool. And I wanted to talk about that just to let people know, not that I presume that many of you listening to this are incarcerated in juvenile facilities.
Right. But hey, maybe that's a market we haven't yet tapped.
Yeah. Or adult facilities where you could be incarcerated. And I really don't think that a lot of those people writing all the new agey follow your dreams things came from those kind of circumstances. You know, maybe they did. Maybe they're all incarcerated in cells around me because I was not in a position to get up and look.
Right. But on the likely chance that wasn't the case.
Yes. I think it was important to start out with that story because sometimes people say, well, Dr. DeMars, it's easy for you to say that you need to work a little harder every day because you live in a house by the beach in Santa Monica. You don't know what it's like to be poor. You don't know what it's like to overcome obstacles.
Well, people tend to only see the now. They don't actually have an idea of what goes into getting to that point. It's kind of this instant gratification thing. Oh, well, you're in Santa Monica by the beach. You have a company. So what do you know?
Because you must have always been there. So that's the first thing that I want to talk about in More Than Ordinary, that no matter where you start out, it's amazing where you can end up. But it's not, like you were saying, like the guy from Annie came rolling in and said, hey, get up off of that bed.
Right, right. He did not bail you out.
Bastard. No. Well, after waiting for Daddy Warbucks to drop in a helicopter and rescue me, and that didn't happen. Yeah, the staff had said, we're not letting you up until you promise not to hit anybody again and say you're sorry. And I said, I'm never going to say I'm sorry, fuck you people. And that was how they left it. And you see these things on TV, and one of two things happens. Either you die, which obviously did not happen, or you magically wriggle out of the handcuffs and escape through the vents or something like that. And that didn't happen either. And in fact, like most such situations, it ended up a whole much more of a fizzle than a flame out. So there's kind of a standoff. I wasn't going to say I was sorry. I'm sure I did not spend 24 hours in handcuffs because I would have peed on myself. And they never show that. It's true, though. They never show that when they do those TV movie things. People are chained to the wall. If you were really chained to the wall for 2 or 3 days, you would pee on yourself. Unless maybe they didn't give you water. But anyway, that did not happen. And some ungodly hour in the morning, maybe 3, 4 in the morning, the woman who had the third shift at juvenile hall, usually I think her job was just to do the laundry, right? Because all the people are locked in their cells. And she comes in and she's a little old African-American lady. And I said old, where probably she was 45 or 50, you know, younger than I am now. But it seemed old to me. And even as much of a jerk as I was not going to kick her in the face. So she said to me, look, I cannot go along with this. You're being handcuffed here. So I'm a little lady. Just tell me you're not going to punch me or kick me and I will unhandcuff you. And so I said, yeah, and she did. And so that was the end of that. So it was not very dramatic. And then I got out of juvenile hall and was back in again. And it all really sucked. And I mean, I talk about it now, like, and this, I'm in that. But I've never been a whiner and a crier. I mean, I realized very young, long before being handcuffed to a bed, that no one was going to come and rescue me. So I may as well pick it up. So anyway, going on from there, I ended up for a long time going to school. And this was the point I wanted to make in today's More Than Ordinary, is people want to be successful. They want to be more than ordinary, but they don't really want to put in the time and effort it takes. They think they do, but they don't realize how long it goes on. So I was 14 when that incident happened. 5 years later, when I was 19, I graduated from college. So it's like, oh, then it's great. But no, because I went to graduate school. And so it was another 2 years where I was taking the bus in the cold in Minnesota winters. And I know this sounds like I walked 9 miles to school barefoot in the snow uphill. And so from that point in juvenile hall until I got my MBA and actually started making a good living was 7 years. And it was 7 years. No, that didn't completely suck. I mean, during that time, I, you know, won the U.S. Open. I did graduate from college, and I wasn't as broke, but I was pretty broke for 7 years straight. It was a big improvement, though. I mean, I went when I got my first real job, and I was working as an engineer and making $35,000 a year or whatever, which 30 years ago was getting close to 40 years ago now. It was decent money. But my point is that people think that they want to run a startup, or they want to win a world judo championships, or they want to, like you were talking last time, you know, be an award-winning journalist. And they think they're willing to put in the effort. But what they don't realize is whether you're talking about building a company or being an elite athlete or getting a PhD, that it's years of living on ramen and looking through your couch to find enough money to go to Dunkin' Donuts.
But, you know, that's the reality of it. The reality is it is not a instantaneous overnight success story. And most overnight success stories have decades in the making that go into them.
Right. For example, the company that I founded on the Spirit Lake Dakota Nation, we went from shaking hands in the tribal administration building where I wrote a check for $150 for the business license, because at the time I was the only one of the three of us that had $150 in the bank, to having $1 million in business within less than 2 years. So that sounds like an almost overnight success story. But Eric and I both had doctorates. April was the controller for the tribe. So we, each of us, had 10 years of building the skills and the connections and the resources that enabled us to go from nothing to $1 million.
Well, and we've done that almost with Seven Generation Games. you know, we've done over $1 million in funding. And you would think, oh, wow, that's huge. And we've been really successful as a startup, but really we're just beginning. And I think when we get to the point when then we do $10 million, people say, oh, they came out of nowhere. But really, we've already been at it for 3 years. So
we'll be right back.
Did you know that kids on average lose 2.5 months of math skills over the summer? That means that when they go back to school this fall, it's almost like everything they learned in math since mid-March never happened. Seven Generation Games can help. Combining adventure gaming and math, our games are the perfect way to keep kids' math skills up to date. It's not flashcards or worksheets, but 3D video games and engaging apps that kids actually want to play, even when they're on summer break. Check us out at 7generationgames.com.
Now we want to get on to the second part of More Than Ordinary, which is tips to being more than ordinary. And Maria has some tips coming from her time when she lived in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Heartland, most beautiful place in the universe, something like that.
Well, actually, it came from after the time I was in Fort Wayne, Indiana. So this came from previously to starting Seven Generation Games. I was a columnist at ESPN, and I had a social media column at ESPN. Before that, I was writing for ESPN for 6 years, I think, maybe more. And one of the things, so when you write for ESPN.com, lots of people who are in journalism, especially sports journalism, are really interested in getting a job like that because it's considered the most elite sports media outlet in the world, or one of the premier sports media outlets in the world. So one of the questions I always got was, well, how do you do that? What went into it? Especially because I was 23 when I started writing for ESPN covering soccer. And so they would ask me that, and Todd as well. And I would say, well, this is what I did. So first I went to NYU, and then after I graduated from NYU, I actually went and worked in Costa Rica for about 7 months. And then after that, I got an opportunity to go back to Sports Illustrated, where I'd been an intern, and basically be an intern again with actually a different title, so an employee type title, where I was an editorial assistant in the editorial projects department. And then from there, I decided, well, I wasn't really getting an opportunity to write, so I was going to go look for a different opportunity. So I quit that job, and the night before I was leaving New York, I got a call saying, hey, would you be interested in interviewing for a job in Fort Wayne, Indiana? I hadn't applied for the job, but it was a referral type thing. And I said, of course I would, because I wanted a job and I wanted to be writing more. I didn't know where Fort Wayne, Indiana was at the time. Now I have an idea of where it is on the map. But I ended up getting the job, and I worked there for 2 years and ended up covering a lot of really great things. And then I got the opportunity to work at ESPN. So when I run through this story with people, they would always be like, well, that sounds really cool, but I don't want to do the Fort Wayne part. And so one of the things, you know, was kind of, they wanted to get the opportunity and to succeed without putting in the hard work. So one of the tips that I would say when we were talking about tips is you have to put in the hard work. And it seems so simplistic, but a lot of people don't actually want to hear that part. They just want to see how you can get from A to Z without having to go from B to Y in between.
And I think that's a really good point. Be willing to move out of your comfort zone. I hear the same thing from people in sports. I really want to be champion of the world. Well, that's good. And I tell people that I moved to Colorado Springs for a while to train at the Olympic Training Center. And then I moved to LA because at the time, the judo club here was one of the best in the country. And people say, yeah, but I have a job here and my girlfriend's here. And so you don't really want to be best in the world. You want to be best in the world if it's not too much trouble.
Right. You want to be best in the world without, if it, as long as it doesn't inconvenience yourself.
It's exactly what most people mean. So
to recap, our tip, actually do the work if you want to be more than ordinary.
SevenGenerationGames.com/buy. Go check us out. More than ordinary games that will make you smarter. Just like us, smarter.
And welcome back to More Than Ordinary, the podcast by Seven Generation Game.
Self-improvement without the new agey bullshit. The third part of our podcast every week is going to be interviewing a person who is more than ordinary. And since we're doing this here late at night, I had two options, Dennis, who refused to speak, and Maria. So Maria, you're first out of two.
Well, no, I'm runner up. You just said Dennis who refused to speak, which implies that you asked him before you even brought this up to me.
No, I actually knew he didn't want to speak. But to get to the point, your sisters and I had a meeting without you, and we came to the conclusion that Maria always underestimates herself. That if you get her on a podcast and you ask her to talk about herself, she'll be like, well, I kind of did some stuff. It wasn't very much. So I'm going to talk about you, and then I'm going to interview you as my very first More Than Ordinary podcast guest. So the things that Maria often doesn't tell people is she graduated from college at 20, and then she went to work in Costa Rica. She's been published in two languages. She lived in Spain and in Costa Rica, and of course in Fort Wayne, as she mentioned, New York City. She had a book on the New York Times bestseller list last year. And when we say it, she goes, oh, but it only got to number 5. The book was My Fight, Your Fight. She wrote it with Ronda Rousey. She also is CEO of Seven Generation Games. She's been voted Emerging Journalist of the Year by the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, won awards for her articles, both published in Spanish and in English. So that's a little bit about Maria Burns Ortiz. And she also has 3 children. So I'm going to jump in and ask you the first question, Maria. You said to me one time, well, yeah, you were never in juvenile hall or in foster care or, you know, handcuffed spread eagle to a bed in juvenile hall. So you didn't feel like you had to overcome great obstacles. But I would disagree with that a little bit and say that you don't have to be, you know, a slave in Burma to overcome obstacles, and that there were some that you had to overcome that I think a lot of people could have used for excuses. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, let's see. I guess we can start with when we, you know, it's talked a bit about how we moved out of California. And one of the defining reasons, I would think, or maybe it's because it's the Me Starring Me show. But one of the reasons that I believe we moved out of California was because when I was in second grade, I was on the school bus and saw somebody murdered literally right across the street. So that was jarring, to say the least.
Not a good day.
Not a good day, no. My parents are divorced, and they are not divorced in this Hollywood happy, let's all vacation together kind of way.
It was the way where I went to a lawyer and said, here's a check. This is to pay you to talk to my ex-husband. When the money runs out, I will give you another check. I never want to speak to him again. I'm willing to pay.
Right. So, yes. So there's that. We moved to North Dakota, which I would say had a number of challenges. I mean, Ron, who was your husband, my stepdad got hurt and ended up passing away. Then we moved out here. I don't know. I think when I think about challenges and I think about it, it's kind of all in perspective. So when I look at it, it was not as tough as obviously people that are child soldiers in Africa or, you know.
Sex trafficking.
Right, sex trafficking. But I kind of look at it, and maybe I think a lot of people look at this. It certainly wasn't, let's all sit around the dinner table every night and a mom, you know, being June Cleaver. Was that her name, June?
Yeah,
okay, you know, it was before my time. You know, bringing, you know, dinner to the table and everything. So I think it was kind of like a mix of, I know there were definitely lots of people who had it better, but it wasn't as terrible as it obviously could be if you're, you know, a child soldier in Africa. So that's why I think for me, it's kind of a hard situation. You don't want to be like, oh, poor me, because you always have people say, oh, there's kids that have it way worse, which I agree. But I also look at it and I think, yeah, it definitely could have been a little bit easier.
But you have never used that as an excuse. I know people that 20 years later, they'll be saying, well, I have all these problems because my parents were divorced and they fought all the time. Mm-hmm. Or I saw somebody get murdered. Of course, I am depressed and unable to get a job. So anyway, I want to go on to the next question because this is only a 15-minute podcast, and that has to do with more than ordinary accomplishments. And that's why your sisters and I were saying how we didn't feel like you gave yourself enough credit because you actually had a book and a baby due the same month.
Yeah, that was one of those things where that wasn't part of the initial plan. You know, writing a book is not necessarily go on this timetable you imagine it would be. But yeah, they called and they said, we've decided the publishing date for the book is set and we want the final draft in 2 weeks. And I had said, well, I had a baby yesterday, so I'm going to go home from the hospital and I'll give you a call in a day or two. And then it ended up being a 320-page book. And I would say 240 of those pages, between 200 and 240, were written between having the baby and 2.5 weeks later. So that was, yeah, exhausting. That's one where I will go out and say that was more than ordinary, because later I read about somebody else who wrote a book and said, oh, yeah, it was 2 years in the making, 2 years of writing in the making. Our book was, I mean, we've known each other our entire life, but it was certainly not 2 years worth of writing. It was literally 20 hours a day for 2 weeks plus a, you know, 2 to 4 week old baby.
And if you haven't had a baby, then you probably don't appreciate how difficult this is. It's like I had a baby. That would be you.
Mm-hmm.
And then 6 weeks later, I win U.S. Open in judo. And people who haven't had babies are like, oh, yeah, that's pretty good. People who have had babies are like, fuck. Right?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's one of those things where I look back and I don't know. That's where the superhuman level just kicks in. And you're like, this will get done.
That's right. Okay, the third question I have is about risk-taking, because you have actually done a lot of things. I mean, you're a little person. Anybody watches this on YouTube, look over there. She's small. I'm small too. So you're 19 years old in Spain and you decide with your friend, let's go to Africa, because when else are we going to have a chance to go to Africa? And you guys hop on a ferry, go across the Strait of Gibraltar and go to Africa. And then when you graduate from college, you're only 20 years old and you're like, hey, I think I'll go work in Costa Rica. I don't know anybody in Costa Rica, but hey, they got sloths and a rainforest.
Sloths are awesome. I got to feed one a banana. Yeah, but well, I think if you look at it even more, I mean, when I went to NYU, I'd never been to New York.
Yeah,
you know, this was not, like I said, when we talked about, you know, having it easier or harder, you know, I was really lucky in that my parents helped make it happen so that I could go to New York University. I mean, you were just kind of like, wherever you get in, if it's a fit, you would make it happen. So that was great. But I didn't have the opportunity to fly out there and check it out and go to the orientation in the summer and have gone there 8 times before school started. And I just thought NYU sounded like a great fit for someone who wanted to study journalism. So that's where I was going. So getting on the plane there and just getting off me like, oh my God, what have I done? Yeah. So what makes me think that I can do those things? Is that what your question
is? Right. Most people wouldn't say, oh, I think I'll go to Spain and live there for a year. And I think I'll hop on a ferry to Africa. I think I'll go live in Costa Rica for a year. I think when I'm 17, I'll hop on a plane, fly to New York, and live there, because sounds good.
Yeah, well, I mean, to me, I think you just have to try it. You know, if you really want to do something, you really have to go for it. And you have to look at, if there's an opportunity in front of you, you have to seize it. I mean, as corny as that might sound, but, you know, why not? I mean, this is something I really want to do. I want to go to New York. That, you know, I want to go to school there. That's, I mean, more of a big picture thing, but you look at when else would it be in Africa? You know, why wouldn't I go to Costa Rica? There's certain points in your life where you have these opportunities to do things, whether it's travel or, you know, write a book or take advantage of jumping and doing a startup when you've built your whole career being a journalist. And I think that the things work out best when people actually take those opportunities and seize them, because otherwise you're going to be left wondering, oh, if only I had. And I never, ever wanted that to happen.
So you're not one of those bloom where you're planted people?
Yeah, no. Well, since the longest I've ever lived in a home since I was born was, what, maybe 3 years, you know, in one location, I'm certainly not a bloom where I'm planted.
Because you're not a tree.
No, that's true. But packing. Well, yeah, exactly. Packing. Oh, I never have to move again.
Well, anyway, I think that you are more than ordinary, and I was looking for a co-host for this podcast. So what do you say, huh?
Well, I'm in.
All right. So that's 15 minutes from More Than Ordinary from Seven Generation Games. Go check out our games, sevengenerationgames.com.
www.sevengenerationgames.com/buy. Buy our games, because even better than listening to our podcast is sending us money, and that's the best way you can do it.
And we even have blogs. Or you can follow me at Anne Maria Stat.
Or me at Burns Ortiz. And there you go.
Should we sing? This is part where I sing.
No, tune in next week and you can hear her sing.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Ordinary podcast.
For more information, please go to our website, sevengenerationgames.com. And that's seven, as in the number seven, generationgames.com.
If you'd like to learn more about math and history, or increase your vocabulary while at the same time having fun, you can purchase our games at sevengenerationgames.com/buy.
You can also donate and help the much-deserving student.
And as always, please tell a friend and don't forget to rate us on iTunes.
It's never too late to be more than ordinary.